Back. HKM, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, hey, buddy. I'm good, man. Thanks for inviting me on your show, yeah. And it's been my pleasure to be here. And Blockmates is an amazing platform. And I've been reading your articles. I've been watching a couple of videos. And they are always full of alphas. They are always full of different insights from the industry. And I love to watch the different perspective of a guest, which generally bring their views on your podcast. It's always amazing to watch this podcast, man.
Thank you very much. Yeah, as I was saying before we jumped on, I wasn't exactly getting tired of doing project interviews and stuff. There was a few shitty comments of people being like, oh, how much are they paying you to do this? I was like, yeah, there's about 500 people who watch this podcast. They're not paying me shit.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to speak to some people who are just, you know, having like a nice relaxing conversation instead of having to kind of like study for hours on end before you go into like a podcast, you know. So yeah, thanks for keeping me company and joining me, I suppose.
It's my pleasure, man. Yeah.
So what's keeping you busy at the minute? I mean, actually, before we get into that, why don't you give us kind of just a bit of background, a bit of high level, what you're kind of up to, just to give some of the guests, just to give some of the audience a idea of who you are, what you're up to, and kind of that, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm in crypto since 2016. So I come from a entrepreneurial background. So I have built a couple of startups in my career of last 12 years. So like while building my last startup, I came across blockchain tech and I started exploring blockchain, and I sold my last startup to one of the company in India. So when I moved out from my last startup, my last startup was a software as a service startup. We built a housing security application. So then that got acquired, and I, being an entrepreneur and being in tech geeks, I always look out from different ideas. And I have a background of hacking, right? So I started my career as a hacker. Even I have a tattoo written on my wrist. So I always got fascinated by this different cryptographic concepts, because we have used that in my initial days as a hacker. So when I come across blockchain tech, I got fascinated by how the cryptography is being used to create this kind of distributed and P2P and decentralized system, and how this system can give power back to people, how they can distribute money, they can distribute rights, they can distribute content in a fair way. The transparency is there. I like the security element. I like the fact that blockchain can't be hacked and all. So I got fascinated by this tech. And there is one catch that when I was reading about blockchain, I came across Bitcoin, and I mined Bitcoin before, like back in 2013. It was kind of passive mining. One of my friends was mining, and he told me that you should also mine. Then I told him that why don't you set up the mining setup on my desktop. I had a GPU based desktop that time, and GPU was enough to mine Bitcoin back in 2013, right? So he did all the setup, and the setup was running, and one of my friends ended up mining 2 Bitcoin or something. And we even sold that Bitcoin at a price of $200 that time. So that time it was like in India, $200 was a good cash too. And we were bachelor, and we were just passed out of college, and we were struggling basically. So it was kind of good cash to have. And I didn't read about Bitcoin that time. I had no clue about blockchain, right? And after a couple of years, after a couple of months, I was invested in one of the digital currency project called Liberty Reserve. So it was kind of centralized digital currency. The website was shut down by the US government at that time, and a lot of people lost money in that project. So what happened that time, that freelancers and all the hackers and all people who were doing outsourcing for the international clients, they used to avoid the cut which was done by PayPal. Used to cut almost 10% or something that time. So we used to find alternative way to save that money. So Liberty Reserve was one of the way, and Bitcoin was the another way. Liberty Reserve was more popular than Bitcoin. So I was invested into Liberty Reserve. I bought a couple of Liberty Reserve that time. So I lost money there. And during the same time, I also thought, maybe Bitcoin was something like this, and it will also be a scam like Liberty Reserve, and government will shut down Bitcoin at some point of time. So I never search about Bitcoin during next 3 years. And then let's go back to 2016 when I sold my startup and when I was looking for different ideas, looking for different tech. And that time, when while doing research on blockchain tech, I found Bitcoin again. And when I was searching about blockchain, when I was learning blockchain, there was a very limited resources available online, right? We have a website called BlockGeek, which is still out there. I think it is a website, the founder is, I think, Vitalik's father, if I'm not wrong, for BlockGeek. So that was an amazing resource. And we had very limited YouTube channel for blockchain-based content that time. And I had a blogging experience as well. So I used to blog about hacking previously. So then I thought, why should I start writing blog, because I was learning and I can also share the same thing with people and they can also learn. And during the time, I can also build an IP or business around my blog in the later years. And then I started writing blogs and I set up India's first blog, you can say, which we later converted into a proper media publication platform in 2017. The website name was itsblockchain.com. It is still out there, but I'm not active right now on that front. And during the same time, I also started looking for jobs in companies as a blockchain consultant and on non-tech role. And luckily, I found a job offer from one of the IT companies in India, and I work as a blockchain consultant for 4 months. So my starting point was blockchain. So I spent at least 6 to 7 months in blockchain, working as a blockchain trainer, working. I also created a course on Udemy that time, writing about blockchain and, you know, building use case on blockchain and everything. And after one point of time, I got married and I was in need of extra cash, because when you get married, you have extra responsibility. You need to have some extra cash, right? And so then I started looking out what are the ways to make some extra money. So then I came across, you know, Bitcoin could be one of the way. And Bitcoin is not that profitable way. You can go into alternative investment like Ethereum and Ripple and Neo. These three were top that time. Ethereum was something around $1 that time. It is kind, you know, January 2017 or something. So Ethereum was $1. And because I was writing about this industry, I got to know that, you know, Ethereum has potential and Ripple has potential. And during the same time when Bitcoin price was $500 or something, I bought one Bitcoin. And then I started trading altcoins. And luckily, it was a beginner luck. You know, quarter one 2017 was very bullish. And that time we had very limited option, like CoinMarketCap had 1,000 cryptocurrency. And we had like Poloniex and Bittrex, they had, you know, 50 pairs or something. And we used to trade against Bitcoin. And so that time I was lucky, you know, I had no experience of trading that time. I had no experience of any kind of stock trading, stock investing. So I was noob that time. But still, I got this beginner luck and I made 10 BTC within a month. And I was like, man, this is amazing, man. This is what I should do. And, you know, you won't believe, after a couple of weeks, I even resigned from my job because I was earning more. So what they were, I was making the amount like in a week, what they were offering me in a month, right? So I was almost making 4 times of my monthly salary. So I was happy and I thought this is the fastest route to make money, you know? And then I involved in crypto trading and everything. And meanwhile, it's been 6 months while I was writing about blockchain, but I was not getting any views, you know, not many people were interested to read blockchain based articles that time. So I was very struggling, you know, my blog used to get, you know, 500 views per month, 600 views per month, less than 1K views almost for 6 months. Then I thought, and then I observed that people are more interested in crypto trading and altcoin investing and everything. Because then I joined Twitter and I found there's a community building, you know, happening around crypto investment and everything. Then I started writing about crypto investing. Then I started teaching people how to, you know, set up stop loss on Bittrex. That's a very common thing right now. That's a very basic thing. But that time people had no clue how to set up stop loss. And then I start teaching, you know, how you can trade altcoins. And then I also started creating this top 10 list, like top 10 coin you should buy in different months, top 10 low caps, top 10 mid caps, kind of different categories. And so after changing my content, I started getting traffic. And, you know, I use August 2017. I got almost like 150k on my website, 150k views, and that, and after that, like, website did well, and we managed to get, you know, 600k, 700k views, sustained that kind of views for entire year. And during the same time, I was growing my portfolio because I knew I didn't know the market, but the market was good, you know. The market was something like wherever you are investing, you were making something. So I was also making some money, and I came from this background of, you know, building a SaaS based product. So I thought, why should I? Then I noticed one thing: people were selling recommendation, people were selling this Telegram signals and everything. Then I thought I should do something like creating a platform where people can have this signal in a very organized way. And I can charge an annual subscription for that, right? So I created this platform, it's blockchain investment, and where we provided access to a dashboard where you can get recommendation, not only from me, but I hired a couple of guys as well. And we also had a concept of fund manager, like each fund manager will have 20 people. And it was kind of exclusive group. We had a capacity of 500 members at the time. Only 500 members can join that group. And I also used to write articles. I also used to provide educational resources to them, so they can also learn while they are earning money. So they that business did well for me. I made money. And when I started investing in crypto, that time I had less than $1,000 in my pocket, and I ended up being a millionaire by end of 2017 when Bitcoin hit 20K. So, and that was kind of, I never imagined that I could make millions like in less than, you know, 6 to 7 months. But and even at the same time, like when you make money that fast, you didn't realize how to manage that money. That's the main thing in crypto, you know. It is very hard to manage the money, and you always in FOMO, and you always think it will keep on multiplying money. Your money will keep on growing and everything. So even when I hit 1 million, and I asked one of my friends that what is the fuck you money in India? So he thought he should have at least 5 million, man. So then I aimed for 5 million, and that was a bad decision, I would say, because after a month market crashed, and you know, I lost close to like 50-60% of my value by, you know, March 2018 when bear market started. But I had a strong hope, and because the whole community was hopeful that time. Like, we were thinking maybe like Bitcoin will bounce, Bitcoin will never break 6,000 level and something. So I had my 90% of my portfolio was in altcoins, different altcoins that time. So I was only holding altcoins mainly. I had 10% Bitcoin, that's it. And altcoins were crashing badly. And I hold that portfolio for almost 10 months, like till October 2018, when Bitcoin crashed to $3,200. And during the time, you won't believe, when Bitcoin was crashing down to $4,000, I got panicked, man, because I thought, you know, it was like Bitcoin will go to $1,000 and Bitcoin will
go to zero. Yeah.
Ethereum will go to zero and everything, you know. So that time I sold my portfolio, and I converted my portfolio to stable when I was at maybe like 95 or 96%. 96% down or something, you know. That time I converted to stable because I thought it will go to zero or something like that. So yeah, that was just a stupid decision. But after some point of time, when Bitcoin bounced back, and when Bitcoin started railing again, like when it did a bounce from $3,000 to $13,000 during that period, I realized, you know, I had a fortune, and I had very less amount with me right now. So what is the way to recover all the money which I lost? Then I came across BitMEX, man. Then I thought there's a way that you can also, you know, take leverage from market and you can do trading, you know. So, and hypothetically, you always think like you have one BTC and you will keep compounding by doing leverage. Then at one point of time, you can convert one BTC to 100 BTC again, maybe like 2 to 3 months, right? So like hypothetically, you always think you will always win the trade. You never count the, you know, losses and everything, right? So that happens with me, and I learned trading initially, and I was good at trading. I was good at future trading, and I even recovered 50% of my portfolio in initially 6 months of 2019, when Bitcoin went to, you know, 13,000, so there was kind of a mini bull run, right? We got easy opportunity, and I ended up making some money. But after Bitcoin hitting 13,000, and after that, you know, people were like very excited. Even I was very excited that we will hit the all-time high again, because like we never expected Bitcoin to bounce from 3K to 13K, and 13K was this kind of level where, you know, Bitcoin can again go for a all-time high again. But, you know, Bitcoin, but the market took a U-turn again, but market didn't took the U-turn in a flash way. It was kind of very slow bleed or something, you know. It was very choppy at that time. It was very hard to predict the next move. And during that time, you might remember that that time we have very less liquidity in the market. So we used to have that BART move, right? You know, if you are long, the market is supposed to go in your direction, but still it will liquidate, it will hunt your stop, then it will go away. And you used to see these moves almost every day, man. Every day you need to have this kind
so
of
move. Annoying.
Yeah.
So annoying. So frustrating.
And on BitMEX, you have this, you know, liquidations kind of because of that. The error, the engine used to give this error, you know, system overload error, you know, system overload error. So whenever they have a high volume on BitMEX, they used to shut down the trading engine. You can't close your position that time. Because of that, many people have lost money. You know, BitMEX is the main manipulator of market that time. Many people lost money in BitMEX, I would say, man. Many people. And
like the famous, famous line, "Run the stops, I need a new Lambo," from Arthur.
Yeah. And even the chat box was also very crazy, man. That time, the troll box was very crazy. The BitMEX troll box. That time was amazing, man. You know, I even tried to. That's a very nostalgical moment, you know. It's very, now I don't see that kind of vibes which I used to get that time in crypto. So yeah, that period was kind of dry for me. Initially, I made money, but then because of the choppy market, I ended up losing money. I went on a very heavy losing streak, you know. So when you're on a losing streak, you and keep on losing money, and you keep on doing revenge trade sometime, and you lose your discipline, and you also lose your mind sometime. And when you keep doing this trading almost 24/7, because market is open 24/7, and I used to have very less sleep and everything. And I was mentally affected. I was kind of, I was mentally affected because of all this shit which was happening around me, because I made money, I lost money. And, you know, I was also trying to recover money. And then I was on the losing streak. And I ended up losing a sizable amount again during this BitMEX trading streaks. And then at one point of time when I was married, and my wife and we were discussing that, you know, this is not a way to live life, you know, this will not go well in the long term, you know, because I was not giving time to her, and I was very, you know, kind of into me and trading and everything. So then I decided to, you know, leave crypto around lockdown, when lockdown happened in India, like March 2020, like around COVID. So we were locked down and we had no... a lot of people were figuring out different stuff, right? We were trying to figure out different things in our life that time. So I figured out, and I thought this is not an industry I should work in the long term, because this is not working for me. And then I left crypto and I moved to filmmaking. I learned filmmaking. I started making short films and everything. I started exploring new career for me. And then I work as a filmmaker I made two short films. One of my short films also went to 13 Film Festival. I also won four or five awards for that short film. And that was doing well for me. But again, around December 2020, we are starting seeing this bull run again when Bitcoin made the all-time high, right? Bitcoin broke 20K. And my brother is working with Tezos. He's India head in Tezos. So he's like, he was keeping me updated about the industry, what is happening and everything. NBA Top Shot also happened during the same time. You know, people were, even my brother who bought NBA Top Shot at, $50 or something, he made, he flipped for 100K or something that time. So he was telling his story, this is all happening. This is all happening. You need to come back. You need to start doing the thing again. And my website was there, but I was not writing. So he motivated me to write again. You know, he motivated me to write this kind of top 10 list again, top 10 crypto to buy, because people were interested to buy shit coins again. People were interested to buy altcoins again at times. And then I started writing this kind of list again. And I started my writing in January 2021 when I started. The traffic was kind of 1K views per month because site was dead. And after a month, we hit to 200K, then 500K, and we on the peak, we also hit 800K like within 4 months. So the website traffic was back. And during the same time, I had a group, I told you, like I had people who were paying me for annual subscription for my using for who were accessing my platform for my recommendation and everything. So a couple of those guys, they were following me and they kept in touch with me. Then we decided, and a lot of people were looking for private sale deal, right? Because many ideas were happening that time. Many private sales were happening that time. You know, many people were looking for this kind of allocations. And we had a media website and we had a decent traffic. Then we decided why we can't look out for this private sale deal. And then we started reaching out this project that we can write article for you. We can do this kind of list for you, and we can include you in our recommendation and everything. And we raised from fund from a couple of guys, like 20, 25 guys. We created kind of decentralized VC fund, and the name is IBC Capital. So we raised more than $4 million from my investors, and then we invested into 40 plus tokens in early stage, like seed round, private round. So that is one of the venture I started during the same time. During the same time, NFT wave also happening, right? And NFT was kind I attracted towards NFT. Initially, I had a hard time to figure out what is this BAYC. And the first NFT project I looked at was Gary V friends, you know, and the Gary drawing friends, were very basic. It was kind of any child can draw this kind of images, you know. It was like, and the price was very high, man. The price was kind of 2 ether, 3 ether. So it was very hard to figure out why people are paying 3 ether for this shit, you know. And
still hard to explain to people now, isn't it? Like, I don't bother. I just, it is what it is.
Yeah. So, during the same time, BAYC mint also was happening that time. And my brother minted BAYC. He also told me to mint BAYC. But again, I had the perspective that why should I spend, 0.08 Ether on these monkey images? I won't spend, you know. And but I was fascinated by the different use case of NFT. Like, I like the domain name NFTs, right? I like this ENS domain. I like this unstoppable domains and everything. So I bought a couple of ENS domain, and I was also participating in one of the auction arranged by Unstoppable Domains for India.crypto. So it was a 24 hours auction. And the final bid was kind of 2.54 Ether or something. So I was participating in that auction, and I won that bid. Like, I bought that domain at a price of 2.4 Ether. So that was one of the major NFT investment I did initially. But when BAYC started pumping, and when I realizing BAYC is kind of, it was 0.08 Ether, I missed that NFT, and now it is kind of 10 Ether within 2 months. So then I thought, I should try this. You know, I should collect, at least put some money, put my risk capital into NFT and try and, see how it goes, because there is a money to be made. People are making money. I can also be try to understand this space, and I can actually make some money. And then I was starting hunting every project. People were mentioning that it could be in the next BAYC. I was buying, during that process, I was buying every shit, man. I bought Vogo. I bought... hash mask, I bought everything which was coming. Even I was minting new random project that time. And I also, but during that, I lost some money as well, but I ended up catching a couple of great projects as well. Like I bought Azuki when it listed the price was 3.5 Ether or something. So I bought Azuki. And I rode Azuki to 37 Ether, like when price went to 37 Ether, I was holding. But when Azuki was at 35 Ether, people were saying it will go to 100 Ether very fast. So I didn't sell, I didn't sell at a time. But I sold when Jaga Bond, he got doxed, right? He got the non-doxing event or something, undox. And I know there was a controversy around his identity, his previous work and something. And during the time, the floor price also went down very badly. So I sold at 15 Ether or something. I even bought NFT World when the NFT World at a price of 0.15 Ether, NFT World went to 18 Ether. I didn't sell. I ended up selling when the Minecraft controversy happened. I ended up selling at 0.7 ether. So that was kind of bad luck, you know. So it went up one point of time. My NFT portfolio was kind of, you know, $500,000 or something. Like I invested 100K and I made 400K or something. But, you know, after this all this bear market happened, now the portfolio is somewhere around, you know, maybe like 50K or something. You know, I went almost from 500K to 50K again, like 90%. So that is NFT for me, man. So at the same time, then I also fascinated by the idea of DAO. You know, DAO was amazing. A lot of people were building this DAO and everything. So I launched this project called IBC DAO. So I was that time, you know, I found this problem in the market. Many people was trying to collect Azuki and all this blue chip, but the floor price was very high. You know, entry barrier was very high, but not many people were having that kind of amount. So I thought, why should I provide this fractional ownership, you know, through a DAO? So I created this IBC DAO, and we raised almost, you know, $500,000 within 24 hours from the community itself. And we launched the project, and we sold 800 NFT or something out of 1,200 NFT. So each NFT priced at 0.25 Ether. So that was also one of my experiment as a launching as an NFT collection. At the same time, I was also launching this DAO. And DAO is very simple. Like it is, the whole fund is governed by the DAO. The more NFT you have, the more share you have in the treasury. And we also have a very active governance on Snapshot. So whenever we were buying an NFT, we used to put out this proposal. Whenever we're selling this NFT, we were putting out these proposals. And we had a passive reward kind of thing. Like if you are holding our NFT and if you are part of IBC DAO, if we are selling any position, and maybe in some cases in NFT, we also bought NFT World for DAO, and we got a World airdrop, right? World token airdrop. And the World airdrop was kind of around 20 Ether or something. So we distributed that reward to the, you know, DAO members. So we ended up distributed close to 25 Ether in less than 3 months after we formed DAO. So that was kind of very new concept that time. Not many DAO were, you know, providing this kind of passive reward. Okay. And so that was one of the initial milestone we had. And now we have a couple of NFTs. We had Doodles, but Doodles was kind of bad investment. Like we bought Doodles at 14 Ether. Like we had two Doodles at 14 Ether. So we spent 28 Ether on Doodles, and now it's kind of very bad investment. We also bought World of Women at, you know, 10 ETH or something. So that time it looked like a great investment, but now if we see, it's a very bad investment. So over the time, my investment thesis around NFTs has been changed. Initially, I was very positive about NFTs, especially about PFP NFTs. But now I see, I don't see a future right now for PFP NFTs. Not many NFTs can, they haven't figured out, you know, I would like to share, like they haven't figured out the right way to, you know, grow in the long term. They are all experimenting different ideas, you know, they are trying to figure out. Even Yuga Labs have not figured out. They are also trying to experiment with different ideas. Some ideas may work in the short term, but I think it's a long way to go. You know, it's very early, too early to say that PFP NFT could become a next Web3 brand or something. It's very too early to say that.
So I think you'll not in this market environment, but I think when things start to look a little bit more rosy, you'll definitely start seeing a lot more NFT projects launching their own token.
Yeah,
because I think they're running out of ideas, and I think they're just going to launch a token. There's already rumors of a few doing it, but that's just that's my outlandish take of what's going to happen.
No, that is true. Because, you know, initially many projects were just following the template of Yuga Labs. Like the Yuga Labs have done airdrops, so they were also doing the airdrops. Yuga Labs have done token. We will also do the token and everything. So Azuki may drop a token very soon. Something like Memeland is also planning for a token, meme token, right? So like I think Memeland has some kind of value capture. Like Memeland is already they have a very strong brand. Like 9GAG is a very strong memetic company. So I think it could be a good investment at this moment, but I'm not trying to invest anything right now, because now I see AI art could be a future. Not all AI artists, but couple of AI artists who are building their name, they might get some, their work might get some attention in the near future, you know, because I've seen a couple of AI artists also got their artwork in, you know, Christie's and Sotheby's and everything. So it is happening. The space is very hot.
Yeah. Is there any off the top of your head that you know?
So there's one guy called Rafik Endamol. So that guy is one of the legendary AI artists. And you might have noticed it, rotating images, chemicals in a wall kind of exhibitions. These kind of these images has been circulated on Twitter very heavily. So his artwork has been exhibited in almost every art gallery. And you know, people like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, they have been his guest in his work and everything. So that guy is amazing. Like he has, he has created his own algorithms by using some codes and everything. And I can show you his work. This is the same guy. Wow. So his work is amazing, man. So he's using different data points to create this different, you know, image, the different artwork, AI artwork. And this is out of the box. So a couple of his NFTs are available around 0.25 Ether or something. The floor price is low for his work. So I collected a couple of his NFTs. And apart from him, I also collected a couple of NFTs from Fellowship AI. It's a new project. They also launched this post for photography NFT. So post photography is new subject genre in AI art. So there is one NFT project called The Life in West America. So the floor price was for that project was kind of 0.6 Ether or something. It went to 13 Ether within 2 weeks, you know. Then I thought, why? Then I thought this could be a new deal, you know. So the Fellowship AI, they have curated, they have launched this collection and they have curated AI artwork from 20 different people and they launched the Genesis collection recently. So I was part of that and I bought a couple of NFTs there. So I think AI art is a niche right now, but I think it could have some potential in the near future. And apart from that, I'm more bullish on DeFi right now. You know, I'm more looking into DeFi. I'm more looking into RWA, you know, as a narrative. And it's all narrative game right now, you know, even on investing wise, it is not like wild altcoin season or something. Altcoin season is happening in the part, I would say. Altcoin season is there, but it is happening in narratives, you know, couple of coins from different narratives are playing out at a given time. Initially, you have seen this AI narrative, then LST narrative are there, infra narrative are there. Now, there is a discussion around RWA narrative, right? So I'm trying to learn about these narratives and I become a fan of on-chain data. Like I've been exploring on-chain insights since a couple of months. So I follow Token Terminal very closely. I follow DeFi Llama very closely. I try to follow which are the projects which are getting traction on, you know, fees side, TVL side and everything. So yeah, that is all I'm doing for my investing and also for my content, because my content is mainly revolves around educating people about on-chain data, how they can analyze project by their own self, how they can read fundamentals, how they can analyze tokenomics, because this part is more important, I believe, because what happens right now, because many people have a notion that crypto is a shortcut to make, you know, quick money, you know, they are all following in, they are all speculating, and because you've seen this current crazy run of meme coins, right? People are buying these random meme coins because they think it will go to 100x, right? So this will change eventually, but I'm just trying to do my part to change this behavior by providing this, you know, content in a valuable way, right? By providing the right direction, that this is the direction you should take. Because in the end, I believe in the stock market, when you're investing in a company, you check financial report, you also check company balances and everything. At the same time, when you're investing in a tokens, these tokens are kind of startup, right? They are building startup, they are building a product. And token is one of, you can imagine token as a share, owning a share in a company, right? So similarly, if you are owning a share in a traditional company listed in a stock exchange, when you are in that scenario, you are looking at financials and everything. Similarly, you can also look at on-chain data, on-chain report. Messari published quarterly report every month, every 3 months, right? They have recently released a quarter one 2013 to 2023 report for almost 50 to 60 projects, right? So you get the data. Data is out there. On-chain data is out there. Tools are out there. And now I believe it is more fundamental driven investing. It was not there in the previous cycle. It was not there in the previous bear market. That makes me think this bear market is very different. Even in the innovation cycle is very vibrant. You know, you are hearing about many different innovations are happening. People are talking about modular blockchain. People are talking about decentralized sequencer. People are talking about data availability layer. People are talking about Eigen layer is amazing, you know. So a lot of different things are happening. So I think this bear market is very, very exciting trend wise and development wise. You know, you keep on hearing new things and you keep on learning new things. That's an amazing part. So yeah, so I'm enjoying this bear market personally. So I try to spend my time as much time I can spend on learning part. And what I'm learning, I'm simply sharing through my content. I'm writing thread. I'm also recording video and everything. Yeah.
I think there's like a huge overarching theme here to for people who are listening is that it's sticking around during these like times that get pretty difficult and hard to stomach, which is what you've tended to do since 2016. And now I completely agree. This has been, all right, it's been brutal. Let's get that out of the way. It's been horrendous. But the amount of innovation and kind of optimism that is still left in from the builders that are actually out there and like getting shit done day to day and like innovating on like this new kind of financial layer, it's that's kind of kept me interested enough and motivated enough to continue. There's like some really quite bad times I think during the past like 2 years, but there's just so much happening, like you said, like real world assets. So that's super interesting. As you say, Eigen layer, we had Sri Ram on a couple of weeks back now. If anyone wants to watch that, like,
he's a great guy. He had an amazing insight. I've listened to a couple of his podcasts with Bangladesh So and everything. So amazing guy, amazing resources to have.
He's a great character as well. I thought like for such an interesting topic and someone who's like obviously very heavy academic background, I thought he was going to come on and be very like, you know, quite formal and a bit straight, but he was great. He's like, he's a right laugh, like even before and after. He was just, he's like really fun to get on with. So I'm really interested to see what happens there. And as you say, there's definitely a lot of emerging kind of LSD projects that are popping up. I won't name them because they're pretty low market cap, but I don't want to get called.
Pendle is good. Yeah? Pendle Finance is great, man. Pendle Finance, I've been following. It is amazing.
Pendle's so sick. Yeah. And Flash Deck as well. Their token's taken a beating, but just the idea of like they'll benefit massively from like the LSD narrative because people can speculate on what the future yield will be. And my idea is the more of these liquid staking derivative platforms that come on online, the more competition there is, the more competition for users there is, and like there's more funds and emissions going to be paid out as a customer acquisition source. So does that get factored in to Pendle? It's probably going to be the arena where people speculate on that, I think. So I don't know. They're only just getting started, those guys, and it's been a very, very long path to finding them true product market fit, and I'm really, really happy for them because they've got to this point and they seem to be getting the recognition they deserve, you know. And it's still, I mean, it's what, 50 million market cap or something. It's not financial advice or anything, obviously. I'm an idiot, but I still think it's the upside of that is it's quite large.
Yeah, it's good. Pendle has a great value accrual as well. I think they distribute reward to the holder, right? Also, liquidity provider also get decent reward. And I think there's some 3% or something they share from platform fees, right? Yeah, so I think value capture is there, you know. Pendle as a token is also impressive. So I personally bought a couple of Pendle recently. Not financial advice, but I think it's a decent project.
The what's really interesting is, what day is it today? So on the 1st, there's a project called Equilibria. That's
it's on Kava, right?
Yeah. No, so Equilibria is gonna effectively be a convict on top of Pendle. So they might have the same name.
It's pretty
name. So they've taken in a lot of Pendle. They're going to perpetually lock it. Obviously, that helps if they want to like obtain quite a large ownership over like the Pendle protocol. But then there's also another protocol. It's the guys who have Magpie protocol. I think they started to like create a liquid wrapper for like the Wombat token on Binance Smart Chain. So these guys, they're actually on Arbitrum as well now, but these guys are also going to be trying to acquire as much Pendle as possible. So they've got these two protocols now that are building on top of them. So okay. people are obviously looking at Pendle and being like, this is an asset I want to buy for cheap now. Lock. Yeah. And further down the line, if it's an order of magnitude higher than where it is now, the rewards that I'm going to get paid are going to be like a really, really good return on investment, you know? So it's always interesting when you start to see flywheels like that.
It could be next GMX, in my opinion. Like GMX started the similar way and they ended up capturing amazing market, you know? So it was very, when GMX was something around, you know, $5, I bought a couple of GMX. I even staked GMX that time. And I was very positive about the idea of derivative because even in the centralized exchange, 80 to 90% of their revenues coming from this options and future mainly, right? Sport trading volume is always down. And, you know, it is always great for exchange to make more money because this is kind of a medium. Many DJs are playing with futures and options, mainly futures. So I thought this use case will grow only, you know, derivatives-based DEX will grow only. And now you see there are more than 50-plus projects already out there on different chains trying to build different derivatives. But there is an innovation happening in this area as well, like Level Finance is there. It's a new protocol and they are trying to build this kind of different risk management strategies for liquidity provider. And they also have a zero slippage trading experience and everything. So I think there is a scope, right? Like GMX is there, like GNS is there, but still we can see a new player can also emerge in this particular category. So derivative can be a very dominant category in the near future, right? Like whole DeFi, but I think when we talk about subcategories in DeFi, I think RWA could be the top category. But RWA is very early, in the innovation cycle, you know, because what are these RWA tokens? These are basically securities, right? So without having proper compliance, without having proper securities laws in place, it is very hard to bet on these tokens for the long term. So I'm avoiding them as a long-term investment. Even I'm suggesting the same. I think it could be the first hype and bust cycle for RWA because you are seeing many people are started. Like it's the only trend you are reading about on Twitter these days. All guys are talking about RWA. They are shilling different coins. But I was exploring RWA yesterday and I found a couple of protocols are doing good. You know, there's one protocol called Ondo Finance. So Ondo, you may have heard about Ondo, right? So they are providing exposure to US Treasury like by building this platform. Any DeFi investor can invest into US Treasury and also US money market, you know. So these kind of exposure are like people because right now, US Treasury are kind of safe haven for many people, right? Like 4.5% yield is there, you know. It is way higher than the interest banks are offering right now. So I think this area is promising. But I'm not sure about how RWA lending will play out in the near future. Like this platform like Maple Finance, Goldfinch, TrueFi. They have lended more than $3 billion of loans in the past 6 months. All these top three platforms, Goldfinch, Maple, and TrueFi. And even they got repayment on time, like Goldfinch has 100% repayment rate. But I'm not sure how they keep on sustaining this repayment rate because at one point of time, default could be happened, right? Yeah. So when, in case of default, it's a very tricky process for this RWA platforms. They go to legal route, like all this bankruptcy event will happen and, you know, the same route which has been happening with FTX and 3SC Capital. So that's a very tricky, you know, RWA is very tricky, like RWA lending part is very tricky. And even the RWA, this real estate tokenization is also very tricky because you have no data on like this house where you're getting rental income, like the data on the legality side and data of the owner and data of the whether the house is legal or not, whether it is kind of legal construction or not. You have no data on that part as well, right? So there could be legal. There is many legal proceedings involved in the whole narratives, in my opinion. So it is going to be very tricky, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot. It seems like a lot of friction. I think it will eventually happen. It's just, as you say, I wouldn't want to pick. If you had put a gun to my head, I wouldn't want to pick the winner out of the small batch that is currently live, because I think there's too much regulatory overhang still left to play out. But I don't know. It's definitely one to keep an eye on, because it's like the total addressable market is absolutely ridiculously huge. It's literally everything on the planet.
Yeah, but eventually it will become the biggest use case for Web3. Eventually, like within next 3 to 4 years, almost every asset had a potential to become a RWA. So like the market opportunity are infinite, basically, you know. So it could be the major win for Web3. But at the same time, if RWA wins, regulatory environment and, you know, kind of regulation will win at the same time, because these will be kind of securities token and everything. Then the non-RWA token will have a hard time, you know, because we are going through that phases right now, because there are many discussion around securities and commodities are already happening in the US. Almost every altcoins are in the category of security by their definition. So I believe like next 12 months or maybe like next 18 months, it is going to be a very hard path for crypto overall, you know. We are yet to see what could be the long-term kind of picture for crypto assets, right? How they will be treated, like they will be treated as securities or they will be treated as commodity. It is very hard to figure out right now. So, but I think it will decide the future direction for crypto. The next 2 years would be very important for the future direction for this industry, I think. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that regulation part? What are your thoughts? How do you see regulations?
I think the US, I think the US, and particularly until last week when he was kind of dragged in front of Congress, I thought there was about 90-95% of people in the political camp that wanted to just kill it. But based off that hearing, it looked like there might still be some people who are actually seeing sense and not being complete idiots and trying to stifle innovation. I don't know what his end game is, which is really confusing, because I know for a fact that he knows what he's talking about. I've seen the MIT lectures. I've seen them like many, many moons ago, and thought, yeah, if this guy ever gets him into a position of power, it's going to be good for the industry. And obviously flipped on its head, where it's obviously not. So I don't know what his positioning or maneuvering is for. He's acting like an idiot when he knows what the space is all about, which is really strange. But I think with, particularly with Hong Kong and China and things like that opening up next month, 28 days or whatever it is, I think it's going to force people's hand. And if it's going to push people offshore, people will vote with taking their dollars out of the US effectively. Yeah. And people won't like that. So I think that's what will happen. The UK seems like it's just going to do what the UK does and sit on the fence for a little while until it's Big Daddy America decides what it's doing. But I don't know. It's a very, very strange landscape at the minute. But whoever has that great regulatory arbitrage and just allows people to get on with what they want, I think they're going to really, really do well. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. So I think in a way that different countries will have different regulations, and they will also follow a different kind of criteria to list different tokens on exchanges. Like, I like the way Japan is doing that. I like the way Singapore is doing that. You know, Japan and Singapore, they have a kind of due diligence for tokens, right? So if you talk about Japan, right? So like the Japan was kind of the, they had an initial exposure to Bitcoin, like back in 2013, like when Mt. Gox was popular. So like 70% of the volume were coming from Japan, because it was a Japanese exchange that time. So even they had this massive failure after the Mt. Gox hack happened. And like they had all the reasons to ban Bitcoin activity in their country, but they didn't ban, but they tried to find a solution to, you know, tackle the future problem, right? So right now, if you see, look at Japan, they have a self-governing body, which is reporting directly to the Japanese government. And they have a listing framework. And on the self-governing body, they have people from all the top five exchanges. They are on chair and they are doing all this process and all these activities for this body. And they have created this due diligence for tokens. And if any token they wanted to listed on any Japanese exchange, they need to follow a certain process. Like it will take 4 to 5 months to have your listing approved. And they are basically picking a very quality projects to enable them to trade in their country, right? To provide a better investor protection and provide a limited option to investors after doing a detailed due diligence, right? So I believe it could be the way for many countries who are looking for positive regulation, right? You can't ban crypto, but now you have a tool, you have on-chain tool, you have a different value accrual model for crypto. You can basically identify which tokens are good and which tokens possess no value, right? Those tokens who have strong tokenomics, who have strong value accrual or value capture, these kind of tokens can be treated as a kind of good asset to have. You can treat it as a share in a company or as an equity or something. And you can create a framework for them, and you should have a proper team who have expertise to identify this kind of project. And I think based on on-chain growth and everything, based on tokenomics, all this information are already available. You know, the kind of the way we are selecting this project, they can also have this people on their team or people on government who can do this due diligence, and they can provide a list of tokens which can be listed in, you know, let's say for in a Coinbase in US, if we talk about US, right? So if this kind of regulation happen in the near future, I think it will bring a very strong customer protection and also education around crypto. Because whenever you have a limited option, you will also learn about project. Right now, it's all mess, right? You will keep on hearing new tokens every day. So that is why you are not stick to one thing. You know, you keep on looking for different ideas. You are like dog, you know, you are
chasing cars.
Looking for bones everywhere. Yeah? That's the main problem right now. And just imagine when you have a limited option, you only need to stick to those 50 tokens. Then what other option you have? You need to understand about this project. You need to read the reports and everything. So eventually you will become a very mature investor. You will become kind of value investor like many people are in the stock market and other equities market, right? So I think this could be a very amazing and positive regulation for all the country. Even I am rooting the same for India. But let's see how it goes. But I love the way Japan and even Singapore is also following the same path. They are also having the due diligence process and everything. Even I believe Hong Kong could also present the similar thing, because in the end, you need to identify tokens, right? Without identified tokens, you can't provide a better framework. And you will agree that 99% of these tokens are shit. You know, these tokens are worthless. Only 1% have some potential to be in the long term. So yeah, that thing should be there.
Yeah, I think Japan, one of the head guys leading like the Web3 Council, he's the founder of A-Star Network, I think it is. So
A-Star, yeah.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that, I think, as Japan slowly opens its doors, because that could be, yeah. I mean, that'd be, I suppose Emin is like on the board of the CFTC now from Avalanche, which is also a bit weird but cool at the same time.
Yeah, Avalanche, he's also on advisory board of CFTC. Yeah, you are right, man. Avalanche is kind of good at partnership level. I think they have done a couple of good partnership recently.
Yeah, they're like good at that, aren't they? Yeah. No one's as good as Polygon, I don't think.
Yeah, Polygon is they are on next level on business level.
But it's like they're just a business development team now. I like to think of them as like the Red Bull. They're more of a marketing company than a product.
But I had a very amazing story to share with you about Polygon. Polygon, because the Polygon is from India, right? So I used to invest in a project on early stage, even back in 2017-18. So Matic Network, at that time the name was Matic Network, they were struggling to raise fund, right? They were struggling to raise 1 million initially. They hunted down almost every investor for almost a year. Even they come to me and we had a talk and everything. And I politely declined to invest in this that company, because I thought Indian companies can't do amazing thing in the Web3 space, because I've heard a couple of scam happening from Indian founders that time, So I was not very confident about how they can able to pull this off. And that was one of the worst decision I have made in my life, that I didn't invest in Matic.
So when you seen it on the Binance launch pad that day, you're like, oh shit, I fucked
So yeah, that was again like Binance Launchpad. It was the first project, and Binance was not that major exchange. So like I was like, okay, it is not a big deal. Maybe like they have paid Binance or something. Because that time, it was always there. Like project is to pay in tokens to get listed on Binance and everything, So even they had shared, like Binance has also invested in the token round that time. And it was a growth story, man. After Polygon, now we see a very mature ecosystem in India. Like many projects are building from India. So Polygon has changed the mindset of Web3 builders. Like they have created a new breed of Web3 developers in India. Like after Polygon, now like India also, India has more, like they share like 10% of developer resources, like global developer resources. They have around 10% workforce from India. So I think they have done an amazing job. And I like Polygon because now, initially, when they were building Plasma, right, there were a couple of more projects. They were also in the same line. OMG were there, and they were all Redden Network were there, So they all were in race of building this Plasma network. Similarly, what now we are seeing with GK, the same race was there for Plasma, like Plasma and all the side chain. At that time, Polygon emerged as a winner. Like Polygon was kind of the only project which got traction, right? OMG failed, Redden Network failed, OMG then rebranded into Bubba Network. Now they are focusing on optimistic roll-up, different stories. And so now you see Polygon has different products, right? Polygon has GK EVM, Polygon has Polygon Maiden. So it's kind of zero knowledge based roll-up and zero knowledge based EVM. Like they are building a GK VM, not GK EVM. They have a GK EVM, but they are also building a GK VM, which is Maiden. And they are also building Avail, which is a data availability layer, So now they are building all the different components of a modular blockchain should have, right? They have data layer, they have settlement layer, they are building data availability layer. They already have zero knowledge EVM. So I think they are betting on the long term, So GK is kind of an end goal, right? So GK will take 5 to 6 years down the line. It will become a mature tech. And during right now, I think Polygon is in a very well positioned to leverage that opportunity, because they have a very amazing tech resources. And on the other side, when we talk about Polygon as a side chain, it can be mainly used in gaming, in my opinion. Like gaming is perfect fit for gaming and NFT, right? Like right now, like after the migration of Yurts, you see like many new projects are coming, NFT projects are coming on Polygon, right? So I think Polygon will survive, Polygon will survive this winter, and Polygon may become as a potentially big player in the market. It may overtake, other players, Solana and everything, easily.
Yeah, they'll always be here, I think. They're just setting their stall out from the early days as being this kind of scalable Swiss Army knife, I think, was such a smart move, because it allows you to continue building towards a good vision whilst not being completely sidetracked by pivoting towards other products. Whereas, like, if you think about, like, as you were saying with was it OMG Network, and they've like kind of pivoted to Boba, and it's just like, if you set your stall out early days saying, look, we're going to be scalability Swiss Army knife, whatever the kind of the understanding of where the scalability tech has to go, like, now it's obviously we had optimistic roll-ups, sidechains, optimistic roll-ups, and now like ZK, they've just set this all out so well that they can kind of go and pursue all those things in parallel if they need to, and then just lean into what the market wants. like instead of just being completely optimistic, roll up and that's it. Is that, you know? So that's why they'll survive the test of time, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, that is true. And but it's a very interesting kind of environment right now, because especially when you see on the funding side, many projects are getting a very massive amount of funding. It is very hard to have a valuation close to $3 to $4 billion in a Series A round, right? So Aptos and Sui had a raised fund on a valuation of $2 to $3 billion on the Series A round. Like, you can't achieve that in a Web2 startup. Like, the kind of valuation these companies are getting and the kind of fund, the access to fund is kind of very on a superior level, right? Even the bear market fund, these fundraises are happening. So even in the GK, there are many other startups like Tyco, Scroll, and I think there are five types of GK, GK EVMs, type 1, type 2, type 2.5, 3, 4, 5. So different projects are trying to experiment with different kind of GK EVMs, So for example, GK Sync is doing this type 5 approach. Like, they are type 4 or something. They are type 4 GK EVM. And at the same time, Polygon is kind of type 2. So they are EVM compatible, EVM equivalent GK EVMs, right? So these are all experiment, So we have, theoretically, there are five types of GK EVM possible, right? So which GK EVM may be able to perform well in the near future, which GK EVM can generate proofs faster than others. It's all theory right now, but when it comes on a practical side, we'll see which kind of, which type will eventually win this race, right? So it's an open race. Like, all these projects are potentially candidate to be a winner in this particular GK category.
Well, sir, I've thoroughly enjoyed the past hour. I'm going to have to wrap it up because I've got something else I need to jump on. But thanks very much for jumping
same
on.
Same here, man.
It's been refreshing.
I would like to invite you on my pod as well. So let me know whenever you're free. I would like to hear your journey as well, man. I would like to hear your insight as well.
I'll send you the calendar directly after this. But where do you want people to find you?
My Twitter would be best.
All right, I'll leave it all in the description. But thanks a lot, man. And anyone listening, if you want to find all any of the information, I'll try and leave some show notes below. We'll see you next time. Thanks again.
Thank you, man. Thanks for inviting me. It was an amazing session. I enjoyed it. Thank you, man.